we're holding on Pavrov Omidbey's second line from the bottom. We started a discussion yesterday where Rav and Shmuel had said that if a person is selling grain or wine or whatever to somebody else, and he says, I'm selling you a kor, which a kor is a measure that contains 30 saw, for 30 sloyim, then the whole thing is one package deal, and therefore as long as they haven't measured out the full amount, then he could still back out of the deal, because it's even though at this point we've measured out 29 already, even though he did Meshicha on it already and everything, but nevertheless he still doesn't clean it until the entire 30 is measured out. On the other hand, if he had said Kor b'shloshim saw b'sela, if he said the Kor is for 30, and within that each individual saw is for a seller, then we said that every saw is considered an independent transaction, and therefore each one as it's measured out and as the lekeach does some form of kinyan on it, whether hagvah, whether it's in his keli, etc., then it'll work and he's koinet and the moshe can't back out of the deal. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring a proof. And the question is going to be on Rav and Shmuel. A Braisa says a seichus a poyel las imer legurin. A person hires a worker where the worker is going to be working with him in the granary, and he pays him now in Nissan, that the guy is going to be working for him later on in the year during the harvest season. And he makes up with him hayoyim b'dinner. Every day he's going to pay him a dinner. V'lagodin yofasela. And then at the time of the, now he's hiring him in advance later on during the harvest season because there's going to be, a greater demand for labor, then the same person would be able to charge a sela every day. Because he's hiring him early and paying him early, then therefore he's getting the labor for a quarter of the price. There's four dinarim to a seller, so he's getting him for a quarter of the price that he would if he paid him later in the season. So also lachonas hemenu. So you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to have hanah from that work of his later on, because it comes out then that you have a case of ribis to rabbanon. This is what we learned about in Bava Metzia extensively. You have the concept called agonotter, that when you're paying him extra because you're waiting for the delivery of the material, or in this case for the work, then that kind of thing is also as a form of ribis. So, in effect, you're prepaying now a dinner for you're going to get a seller's worth of work later on, and that doesn't work. Avalim socher mahayoyim b'dinner layoyim v'lagodin yofasela, but if he hired him that as of today, you're going to start working for me, and it's going to be at a dinner per day, and later on during the harvest season, it's going to be that same work is going to be worth a seller. So now, in other words, in the first case, he just says, I'm arranging with you now in Nissan. You're not going to start working for me until later on in the season, until Tishrei time or whatever it is. But now I've prepaid you a few months in advance a dinner per day. So that's a problem. But now we're saying, The flip side is what you do is you pay him the full amount now, but he starts working for you now. So yes, later on in the season, his work is going to be worth more, but that's fine because now already you hired him and he started working for you. So therefore, so now all the 100 days or whatever amount of time you made up with him is considered one long amount. So therefore, there's no agonotzer because he began working right away. Now you're telling me, Rav and Shmuel, that when it comes to selling grain or whatever it is, you're saying that each saw, when he says a kor for 30, a saw per sela, then each one counts as an individual transaction, and therefore we're saying he's able to change his mind in the middle of it. Therefore, we're saying that when he changes his mind in the middle of it, whatever a kinyan had been accomplished on is already done. one, and he can't change his mind on those. Well, then, by the same logic, Kochinami, Kama Kama Mifsek Pasak. Well, then it should come out the same thing over here. The 100 days, so we should break up. He did say that the dinner layoim. He did say that it's going to be one dinner per day, so it should be the same kind of thing. Yes, he said work for me between now and the harvest and the granary season. And it's going to be X number of days, but and I'm paying you X amount. But he also said if the rate is one dinner per day, so it should be exactly the same kind of thing. Every day should be considered an individual thing. Given that at any time either one of them could change their mind, then each one should be considered a separate sale. And now you're back to the problem of Ago Netter, because you're telling him, he's prepaying him now in Nissan for what the guy is going to be working for him in Yemosa Godin in the harvest and granary season, which is Tishrei time. So doesn't that show, in other words, that there's no distinction? Once he said even if he says kur b'shloshim, even though he says saw b'sela, we should say that it's not considered separate transactions, and either one can back out partway through it, and that would mean the whole sale is voided. And then applying that to the worker over here, it would mean, in other words, again, that we're talking about one long period from now until the harvest season, and then fine, he hired him to begin with, and the guy started working for him at a lower price, and therefore it should work. So that's the question. Hachinami kama kama hachinami kama kama mifsak posak. We should say that each day individually is a separate thing that they made up, a separate term of work. And each time the worker can decide he doesn't want to work, he wants to quit the job. So therefore, so the also the honest hemen or bediner, and therefore it should be also to have from him, it should be also to have hana from him at the rate of one dinner midino layoim, and should be also to have hana from him at the rate of one dinner per day. We're saying layoim v'lagoren, and we're saying that each day from now until the granary yofa sela is going to be also lahanas men and bedinu layoim. It should be also to have hanah from him at the rate of one dinner per day v'lagoren yofa sela mutter. And you're saying on the other hand in the braisa that it's fine, even though the price of labor, of the same kind of labor, is going to go up later during the granary season. So what do you mean? Why should it be mutter? Amai v'ha'aga netter lihu? Isn't it a problem of aga netter? And the fact that we're saying that it is allowed seems to show that there should be no distinction whether, in the case of sales, whether you mention the point of it being a saw per seller or not. Either way, we should say whether you're saying a kur for 30 or whether you're also adding the detail of one saw per seller. Either way, it should be considered the same thing. It's one big deal. And therefore he can back out at any time during it, because that's the only way on the face of it to make this deal, to make this din with the worker, to be able to make it work without having a problem of aga netter, because otherwise you're saying that each day is considered a separate transaction. And then you have the problem that he's prepaying for something which is going to be worth much more later on, and that's the problem of aga netter. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava. So Rava answers back. So you're telling me you find that a problem, the Tispera, but how do you think that that's such a problem? Zalzuli v'schirus mi oster. After all, listen, is there an Isser in working for cheaper? After all, with a loan or a sale or something like that, then you have issues of aga netter and issues of ribis. As far as all of that, so even if he prepays him and he doesn't midaraisa, it would be mutter. So if it was a loan, then you have a problem. Mekach or memka, you also have things. There's einah, there's bitul mekach involved. So therefore, in other words, it's not for sure that the sale is going to go through. But when it comes to work, then we can't say, yes, it can happen that a person is going to work, that a person is going to work for cheaper. He needs the money now because he doesn't have money, and therefore he's willing to give a deep discount. So therefore, at least in the sefer, there should be no problem of ribis. In fact, Tosfos actually adds that at the end of the previous Amud, that yeah, I mean, you do have, we learned in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia, in Perek Ezo Neshech, when we learned about all these dinim, we talked about that you're allowed to make, to a certain extent, such deals as far as the price of labor, and that's the point. We're talking about that based on our Gemara over here, only if the worker starts to work right away, we're saying not if you prepay him now, and he's only going to start the work later on. Well, so the Gemara says, so in other words, in short, Rava is saying the difference is that here you don't have any money, actually, you have money changing hands, you don't have any goods actually that you're not doing a loan, you're not selling any goods, you're talking about labor. And therefore, yes, he's entitled to say, right now I'm short of money, so therefore as long as you prepay me for my labor, then I'll do work for you late. Well, so in that case, we're still saying it would be a problem if he's only going to start working later on. It only helps if he's starting to work now. So that brings the Gemara's question. Maishna Reisha or Maishna Seifa. Well, in that case, then what's the difference? If that's the case, then it should be allowed in the Reisha as well, where the guy's only going to be starting work for him several months from now. Why are we saying that in that case you still have a problem of Agar Netzer? And the answer is Reisha, like Ovid Bahadei Mehashta, because the difference is in the Reisha, the worker is not actually starting to work now, Mechzi Ki Agar Netzer Li. So therefore, you still do have the appearance of Agar Netzer, because it's a Chumra Ba'alma, Rashbam says, since he's not actually working now, and the employer already prepaid him now, then therefore it has more of the appearance of Ribis. So again, it wouldn't be, oh, it's true. There's no case over here where it would be also Daradaisa, but nevertheless, it's still close enough to Ribis, to Agar Netzer, that we're going to say it's also Sefer to Kovid Bahadei Mahashta, as opposed to the Sefer, the worker is starting to work right away. Loi Merci Ki Agar Netzer, so it doesn't even look like Agar Netzer, because you're paying him now because he started the work now. So therefore, even though the fact is later on in the season, the same work is going to be worth a lot more, but he's already working for you now. So therefore, there's no, it doesn't even look like Agar Netzer. It looks more like you're just continuing to pay him at the same rate that he's been receiving all this time.
Is Agar Netzer only for money, or is any type of benefit?
I mean, primarily it's money. I mean, again, the whole issue, most cases of Agar Netzer only also did Rabbanan, so the Chum aren't going to outlaw all of them. We learned in Ezer and Neshech, but, yeah, I mean, there can be Agar Netzer involving non-monetary benefits as well. In general, yeah, any time that you're gaining something, financially from the fact that the other guy is not delivering you the merchandise yet or whatever, and you prepaid him and he's giving you a discount because of that, yeah.
But eventually you're going to pay back, so.
Eventually you're going to pay, but nevertheless, the point is you're gaining something now. You're gaining a discount now for the fact that you're waiting to get the merchandise. And any time, for example, think of it. You have all kinds of things sometimes where people will say if you have an early bird discount, for example. So sometimes you have issues of ribis involved. Depending on the exact circumstances, you can't always do that. Here, in effect, that's what the guy is doing. He's getting an early bird discount on the work, because if he waited until the harvest season to hire the guy, he'd have to pay him four times as much. So now we're saying, though, if the one way around that is that the guy starts working for him right away, the worker starts working for him right away, and then there's not even an appearance of Agar Netzer, because, okay, then he's starting to work for you now, and he's just continuing throughout the season.
Ribis is when you get extra, not when you get less. Here you're talking about...
No, not that you're getting less. You're paying less for an amount of merchandise or an amount of work that later on is going to be worth more. Again, what we're saying is now I'm paying you 100 dinar for work that if I was going to first hire you later in the season when I actually need you to start working, then I would be paying you 400 dinar, 100 sela for the same amount of work. Now, like this, So therefore, that's the Agar Netzer is the whole issue. In other words, I'm paying you less and I'm getting back more for, and I'm getting back more than what I paid for later on. But now we're saying that if he's that in the case of work, as long as he's working for you now, then you don't have that issue.
But even if you're going to pay, you're not paying less now. You're just paying something that is going to happen in the future.
You're paying now for something that's going to happen in the future, but you're paying at a discounted price. The guy is giving you a
discount.
You don't know. What do you mean you don't know? You know that later on in the season, this kind of work is going to be worth more. It's a normal thing. It's a normal thing in a farm economy that during the off season, labor is cheap, and during the harvest season, it's worth more because you have a supply and demand, right? You have the same number of workers available, and during the harvest season, you might have a much higher demand. So now you, the farm owner, if you wanted to wait to hire this worker until later, you would have to be paying him a larger amount. Now that you're hiring him early, then you're paying him a discounted rate, and he's going to give you the same amount of work either way. So there's your problem of agoneter. Because you paid him early, therefore he's giving you more, and that's a problem. That's a problem of ribis de rabbanim. But now that he's
A supply of clothes that are going to be used in the summer. I buy them in the winter.
If
because
you're
they're
taking
less expensive.
Delivery of the merchandise right now, then there's no issue of agoneter. They're yours and they're in your possession and whatever happens to them. We're not talking about that. What if, for example, you were to prepay now for clothes or whatever that you're going to take delivery of later in the year, and he's going to say, listen, if you were to pay me later in the year, then you would get 10 suits or whatever for this price. Now instead, because you're prepaying me early, then I'm going to give you 15. That's agoneter. That's classic agoneter, and it's a problem. Because now he's giving you more for the fact that you're giving you for the fact that you're prepaying him in advance. We learned all about this in government here. Kol agoneter osur. Any time that you're saying I'm going to give you something extra because you're waiting to take delivery of the merchandise and you're not taking it now, then you have isurim in it, and then you have the various dinim of ribis that are involved.
That's midrabanan, right?
That's midrabanan. Yeah, midaraisa would only be by loans and only when you make it up in advance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, onward. The Mishnah had said, okay. So this was all a little bit of a digression from the main topic of the Mishnah. The point was that we had brought on Pei Vov Amud Aleph a Braisa about Arba Midas V'Moichrim, that there were four different, and Pei Hei Amud Aleph, actually. We had brought a Braisa that mentions that there are four situations as far as buying and selling merchandise, and We analyzed that braisa in detail, and the last thing we had was when we brought Rav and Shmuel's statement about when he's selling a kor for 30, etc. So we had brought that braisa to try to disprove them. So that was why we brought in this point, and then we went and finished off and explained that. So now getting back to the Mishnah, we said we described in the Mishnah like this. Back on Pedalot Amud Beis. You can have where a person buys a bundle of payers. So we said that once he does Meshicha, then the Kinyan has been accomplished, even if he didn't measure out the exact amount yet, as we learned there, as long as they had made up a price already. So therefore he has a Smichas Das, he's willing to buy at that price. So we said he does Meshicha and then it works. But then we said when he buys flax, then he has to actually pick it up, because as we talked about previously, the point was that flax is not in, that flax comes generally in smaller bundles, and you're able to pick it up, and therefore you need to do that rather than bring Meshicha. What we said another point is, as well, it's easy enough to unbundle it and pick it up stalk by stalk. But now the Mishnah had said, if the flax is attached to the ground, then betolash kol shahu, and he pulls any of the flax out of the ground, kana, then he's acquiring all of the flax. So the Gemara says, what's the logic? Mishum betolash kol shehu kana. How does such a kinyan work? Because he pulled out a little bit of the flax, therefore he's kona all of the flax in that field. How does that work? Amar of Sheshes, Hach of Maya Skinen, we're talking about over here, Domele Lech Yapil of Chokalka, Kol Shehu, the seller tells him, go and improve some of the karka for yourself. And with that, you will acquire everything that's on that karka. Now, karka itself is acquired with chazaka, and one form of chazaka on karka is that you're improving it. So here you're saying by pulling out a stalk of flax from there, you're improving that patch of ground that eventually will be able to replant it. So therefore, the point the Mishnah wants to tell us is that the chazaka on the karka helps. Now, he's not selling him the land in this case. He's only selling him the flax that's growing in it. Nevertheless, first of all, the Mishnah wants us to know that works. You shouldn't think that chazaka on land works only for the land itself. Here it works even though the land itself is not changing hands at all. And second of all, it's that this is not very much of a chazaka. It's only a minor kind of chazaka, picking a little bit of flax that he's able to acquire the rest of it. So therefore, what the Mishnah wants us to know is that works. For that matter, that Ashbam adds also, if he picked some of the Pishgan and the intention was to acquire the land itself, so the guy is selling him the land and he's going to do his chazaka on the land, which will accomplish the pinyan by pulling out some of the flax, and then Ashbam says that would work also. That's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos learns a little differently, that what it means is that now by doing that, by pulling out one stalk of flax, in effect, what the Moshe is telling him, when you do that, this place will become like your chotzer, to the extent that you'll be able to be kona what's in it, and therefore he's kona what's, and therefore he's kona it. So, the point is, in other words, the Rashbam is understanding that what it is he's doing a chazaka on the land, and he's not acquiring any rights on the land itself, not even temporarily, but nevertheless it works for the flax that's attached, whereas Tosfos is saying he's getting temporary rights to the land, that he's borrowing the land until for the purpose of acquiring the flax that's on it. Okay. Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of selling, of buying and selling, so the Mishnah says, "Hamocher yayin v'shemen l'chaver." A person sells wine or oil to somebody else, and the first part of the din that we're talking about in the Mishnah would apply equally well to any other kind of commodities. The Rashbam says we're mentioning wine and oil because further on in the Mishnah we're going to talk about letting drops ooze out, and of course that's not going to apply to solids. Anyway, v'hukru oshahuzlu. Now, in the middle of the deal, after they had made up the price, the going price went up or down. If that happened before the measure is filled up, that lamocher, then it still belongs to the seller, and therefore he could back out, or actually either of them could back out. We're going to see in the Gemara what we're talking about. Who does the keli belong to? That we should say that if that's at this point, it belongs to the mocher until it's full, and then it belongs to the lekeach, because after all, we talked about before that the keli of the lekeach is not going to work in the reshus of the mocher, and vice versa. And on the other hand, if it's a place where his keli is koina, then it should be koina, then should be koina even before it's filled up, especially because we learned yesterday, you could have, even you're measuring out liquids, you can have, like we said, like we learned yesterday in the Gemara, Shnosis Hayubahin, you can have a large keli that has markings in it up till here is X number of logim, and therefore that would be the equivalent of saying that I'm selling you each log individually, and therefore he would acquire it individually. So we're going to see in the Gemara whose keli we're talking about here. Anyway, so the Mishnah says, Iman Shlon is smaller than Midra, if it happens, if a change in price happens, and of course it doesn't have to be a change in price, Tosfos says, you know, I mean, it could be any reason. Usually, the most likely situation where one of them would want to change their mind is where the prices have changed, and now the seller figures he can buy it more cheaply someplace else, or the seller figures that he can sell it more for more someplace else, or the buyer figures that he can buy it more cheaply someplace else. Anyway, so if it was before the measure got filled up, lamoicher, then it still belongs to the seller, and therefore either one can change his mind. Mishnah is smalas hamida. If it happens after the measure is completely filled up, lalekeach, then it belongs to the lekeach, and neither one at that point can change his mind. Vimhoya sarsur b'nehem. What about if there was a middleman between them? So you have a sarsur, and we're going to see in the Gemara that the case we're talking about then is the keli belongs to him. Now, what does a middleman do? Is he buys from one and he resells to the next one at a profit? So then, if there was a saracer between them, nishpura hachavis, if in the middle the barrel breaks, nishpura la saracer, then it's on the saracer, it's on this middleman that he's the one who has to bear the loss because we're using his keli, and therefore we said that, as it's placed into his keli, the point is that Ashbam says you shouldn't think that he's only a shliach of the lekeach. And then when the keli gets filled up, then automatically it's the lekeach's responsibility, and he's the one who bears the loss. No, it's still the saracer's at this point because it's his keli. That's according to Rashbam. Tosfos brings from the Rivam that no, the question is, in that case, then why mention the case where it broke? Do the same thing as in the first part of the Mishnah where the price went up or down. So rather, Tosfos says we're talking about that the saracer is measuring out where usually he himself, usually just the measuring alone, he gets a fee for doing that. Now in the middle of the measuring, the barrel broke because, The thing is, we say we put the blame on him that he's the one who caused the breakage because he obviously wasn't careful while he was measuring. Here, in effect, they hired him to measure for them, and he broke it. So the responsibility is on him. Mishnah is saying. All right. The Mishnah continues. Now, another din is when you're selling liquids, wine or oil or whatever to somebody else, then you have to, so what do? You take your container and you turn it upside down and start pouring the liquid from it into the chaos container. And so we're saying once it stops, once the major pouring of it has stopped, you have to let three more drops go. Now, inevitably, you're going to have some of the liquid, some of the wine or the oil is going to be stuck to the sides of the container that you're pouring from. So after all of it has, after the bulk of it has finished pouring out, then you have to also pour him out three more drops. And then at that point, anything else that's stuck to the sides is going to belong to the moicher. On the other hand, it continues the mission here. Tino mitzis. If on the other hand the seller continues So at that point, having done that, once he's gotten to the point where after the bulk of the pouring has been done and three more drops has come out, if now at that point the seller continues to keep the container upside down and he inclined it to keep liquid flowing out, to keep liquid flowing out from it, umitzis, and he collects more of what was still stuck to the sides, hareyu shamoicher, then that belongs to the seller because the lekeach already gave up on that. He wasn't going to sit there until every drop comes out of the original. Once the three drops have come out, then at that point he's miyayish on the rest, and therefore the seller can keep him those amounts. The Mishnah in Masechta Beitza, by the way, tells us that there were storekeepers in Yerushalayim before the Churban, Abba Sholben Botnis, and the father of and the father of Tzaddik, where they were doing that. They were selling wine, oil, and other liquids like that to customers, and over time they gradually built up a stock of these leftovers that were stuck to the sides of the barrels, when they're pouring it from their container into the lekeach, inevitably some of it is left behind, and eventually when they had hundreds of barrels of that from years and years like that, then they brought it. They didn't want to keep it for themselves. They wanted to go to Lefnim Mishuras Hadin, even though the Chacham told them technically based on this Mishnah it belongs to you. They didn't want that, so eventually the Chacham told them, fine, if you really don't want to keep it, go use it for Tzorchei Rabin. Go use it. Things that the public is going to use, like various kinds of public infrastructure, and that way the people to whom those little bits would have belonged are also going to benefit from those, whether we're talking about like water pits and things like that, water pits, roads, things like that. So, but if it didn't, of course, they wouldn't have needed to do that based on our mission over here, because the lekeach is not going to bother getting every last bit that comes out of the container. There is actually the Rimi Gash gives a different explanation. Actually, he says that the three drops means once you're finished pouring out from your barrel, then you need to add three drops. Then you have to add three drops. But But the Rashba asks on that, why should he need to do that? Now, we are going to learn later on in the Perek, there are cases when you're selling something, you have to add a little bit extra. Sadik Mishalei V'ten Lacha, we're going to learn later on in Daf Pei Test Sadik about that, but nevertheless, that shouldn't require him, in this case, to add three drops, just everything that was in the container. So therefore, so again, the Rashbam says that what it means is the other way around, that once three drops have come out, then you don't need to do anything else. Next. V'achenveni enechayev lahatif sholosh tipin. Now, a storekeeper doesn't even have to do that. He doesn't even have to do the, he doesn't even have to do the three drops. Because he's busy. He's busy. So he has a lot of customers. So therefore, the Chacham didn't want to be matriach him to do that as well. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Erev Shabbos, in Chashecha Potter, Rabbi Yehuda says, on Erev Shabbos, when it's close to dark, then he's Potter. We're going to see in the Gemara, is Rabbi Yehuda saying that there's Rabbi Yehuda being makel over the Chachamim, and saying that here the Chachamim are saying that a regular person needs to do the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying on Erev Shabbos late in the day, even a regular person doesn't need to, or is Rabbi Yehuda going on the Sefer and saying a storekeeper will say never has to do the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda would say most of the time he does, only Erev Shabbos in Chashecha does he not.
About Erev Yom?
Erev Yom Tov, well, Erev Yom Tov is not necessarily the same thing, because Yom Tov, you have a little more, you know, you're allowed to carry, for example. I don't know, the mission doesn't say one way or the other, but Erev Yom Tov, you could say it's the same kind of thing, because you're not going to be able to take money soon, but you could say it's different, because on Shabbos you can't carry, and on Yom Tov you can. The fact is, I mean, you have Mishnayos and Beitza that talk about selling, in that selling even on Yom Tov, you're allowed, a storekeeper is allowed to sell. There's many dinim involved, including that he can't measure out exactly. Anyway, the girsa that
so
we have.
People can sell on Yom Tov?
You have people are going to need wine or oil or whatever on Yom Tov, and yeah, the Mishnah and Beitza, that same Mishnah that talks about Abba Shol ben Botnis and the father of Tzadik, mentions that point. That you're allowed to, for example, go up to a storekeeper on Yom Tov and say, here, I have this keli, I need you to fill it with wine or with oil or whatever, and we'll figure out the details after Yom Tov, and that's fine. It can't be a keli that's known to have a certain measure, and there's a few other dinim involved, but basically, yes. Because simchas Yom Tov, after all, a person may run out of food or drink during Yom Tov, and he's gonna go and get more, yeah. Anyway. The girsa that we have in the Mishnah in front of us over here is that a chenveni is ene chayev lahatif sholosh tipin, that he's not chayev to do the three drops. And again, the Rashbam is saying because he's busy. Now, there are Rishonim, the Rabbeinu Hanano and the Rif, have a girsa, but the Hanakama is saying chenveni chayev lahatif, that no, the storekeeper is required to do the three drops. In other words, the point is, we shouldn't think because the storekeeper is busy, then therefore we should pater him from that. And then Rabbi Yehuda is saying that Erev Shabbos maybe is different. So two different major gersois in the Mishnah. Alright, so the Gemara says, now, in the ratio of the Mishnah, so we're saying, again, that he's selling wine or oil, we're saying until the container is filled up, then it still belongs to the Moshe. So, the question is, Hamid de Man, who does the container belong to? If it belongs to the buyer, then why Adshal and Ismalis Midol Mocher? Why does it belong to the Mocher even before it's filled completely, until it's completely filled up? Midol Lekeachi. After all, it's the Lekeach's Keli, and therefore he should be Kona whatever goes into it, as in fact we learned before. We had the Braisa of the four Midas, back on Daf Pehe, and we said over there that when it's the Keli of the Lekeach, then he's Kona. Now, we did have Rav and Shmuel's din about when we're saying if you're selling the whole thing as one lump sum, but, fine, but here in particular, the Rashbam says again, we did also learn that when the Keli has, that when the Keli has markings in it to show up until this point is X number of lugim or X number of gallons or whatever it is, then we said as it reaches each of those, then you're koina on that, one because they made a deal. The deal was that it's going to be X amount, that it's going to be X amount per lug. So the Rashbam asks, so why does the Gemara wonder about, why it shouldn't work, why he hasn't acquired it until, until the keli is filled up. Why don't we just say, very simple, that here we're talking about where there's no markings like that. but the thing is, the Mishnah is just saying generically. So therefore, we have to understand the Mishnah is saying anytime, as long as it's not filled up, even if he said, I'm selling you the hin for X amount, and within that, each log is X amount, and still we'd say he's been not being kona until the whole hin is filled up. Well, why is that? So, l'keach keli, he should acquire each amount as it comes to that market. The ella b'midah d'mocher. So you're going to say that instead we're talking about a keli that belongs to the seller. Mishnas malas amidah l'keach. Then why, as soon as it's filled up, does it automatically belong to l'keach? Midah d'mocher. He, after all, the mocher's keli. And he hasn't done any, and he hasn't done any kinyan. He hasn't done mashiach. He hasn't done hagbah or anything like that. And the Rashbam adds, given that earlier in the previous sugya, we asked the question, what about if the lokeach's keli is in the mocher's reshus or vice versa, doesn't work, and we ended up leaving the question open, then we can't say, we're talking about over here, that's the mocher's keli in the lokeach's reshus, because then we could have easily answered the question based on that. So what's the case where the Mishnah is talking about where the distinction is whether it's filled up or not? So the answer is Amar Rabbi Ila b'midah sarser. We're talking about in the Mishnah over here where the keli belongs to the sarser, to the middleman. So then it's like the Braisa in the Braisa, the Arba Midas, where we said if the keli doesn't belong to either one of them, and we said that's what it means, that it belongs to a sarser, and he's lending it to them for the purpose of facilitating the transaction. And therefore, we're saying until they finish measuring, it belongs to the mocher. And once they finish measuring, it belongs to the lekeach. Well, our Mishnah is saying exactly as that Bryce had said. So therefore, as long as it's not filled up, then they're still in the middle of measuring, and therefore it belongs to the mocher, and either one can back out of the deal. And once they finish measuring, then automatically that keli now belongs. Now that keli has been lent to the lekeach for him to be able to take the merchandise home. And therefore, at that point, he's koina. And again, we'd have to be talking about that it's in a simta, it's in a chotzer that belongs to either one of them, because as we learned before, if it was in a chotzer that belonged to the mocher, then it wouldn't necessarily work. And if it was in Rishos Rabim, it wouldn't work either. Okay. So there are Rishonim who learn that actually that maybe it could actually work in the Rishos of the that it could be in the Rishos of the Lekeach as well. Because again, the point is until they finish measuring, it's still a keli that belongs to the mocher, and therefore it's in the Lekeach's property, and therefore it wouldn't work. That depends on the Machlokas Rishonim that we talked about the other day, whether when we said that one person's keli and the other one's Rishus doesn't work unless he gave him specific permission to put it there, is that a matter of suffix, or is it a matter of that it vadai doesn't work? So the Gemara says, wait a minute.
So what is it? Is it the halacha?
Different opinions among the Rishonim. Everybody agrees that it doesn't work. The keli of the mocher and the rishus of the lekeach, or vice versa. Everybody agrees it doesn't work. The question is, on what grounds does it not work? Is it because it's a matter of a suffix whether it works, or is it that definitively that it doesn't work? We talked about that a few days ago. The Yad Ramah points out in Afkamina, and what happens if you did both? What happens if you had it in a keli belonging to the seller in the property of the lekeach? And later on, in a keli of the lekeach and the property of the mocher, if you say it's a suffix one way or the other, you've covered your bases. But if you say it's vadai, not, then not. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Ila is saying our Mishnah is also talking about that scenario. The keli doesn't belong to either one of them; it belongs to the sarsu. Well, the Gemara asks, well, Mitkatani Sefer, but he marries Sarasur B'Neim. What do you mean? The continuation of the Mishnah first brings in the Sarasur, that if there's a Sarasur involved, Nishpura Achavis, then if the barrel breaks, Nishpura La Sarasur, then it's on the Sarasur, and it's his loss, according to Rashbam, because it belongs to him still at this point, and according to Tosfos, because they hired him to do the measuring, and he was obviously careless. So, Mikal Dureisha Labba Sarasur Eskinim. Evidently, the Dureisha is not talking about where there's a Sarasur. And the answer is, the Gemara says, no. Reisha mida b'loy sarsur, sefer sarsur atzmai. Because in the Reisha, we're talking about that the sarsur himself is not involved in the measuring. He lent them the keli in order to facilitate the transaction, but he himself is not doing the measuring over there. So implicitly, therefore, he's lending it to the, uh, to the, to the moicher until they finish, and then afterwards, as soon as they're done measuring, then he's lending it to the lekeach. As opposed to the sefer, is talking about where the sarasur himself is directly involved. He's the one measuring out. So therefore, so we're saying that then if it breaks, then it's on him. Because then at that point, since he himself is measuring it out, according to the Rashbam, the vort is then that he's not lending the keli to either one of them. He himself is having the keli in his possession so that they'll pay him for his time and effort. And therefore, if it breaks, then it's his responsibility because it was in his keli. He's the one who acquired it, and then it broke. According to Tosfos, the point is that they hired him to do the job of measuring, and he broke it, and therefore he'd be responsible because he didn't do proper shmirah. So again, the case of our Mishnah, where we're saying that it depends whether it's filled up or not, is where the keli belongs to a third party, and that was in fact one of the Arab Midas that we learned in the Braisa on Daf Pehe, where in that case, then yes, until it's filled up, it still belongs to the Moshe, because they're in the process of measuring, and once they finish, then it belongs to the Lekeach. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah that we described how when you're selling liquids, then you have to, after the continuous stream has stopped, you have to let three more drops come out, and then after that you can call it quits, and then anything else that still remains stuck to the sides belongs to you. So Hikinu Mitzis, but then the Mishnah had said that then even afterwards you tilt the container on the side and liquid continues to flow out of it, at that point it belongs to the Mocher, because we said the Lekeach gives up getting it. So the Gemara says, he solik Rabbi Lozer, when Rabbi Lozer came up from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkesei L'Zeiri. He met up with Zeiri, who was one of the old Talmid Chachamim from the previous generation, Omalei, and he asked him, Mi kan Tanya da'afye Rav Midis? Is there a Tana over here that Rav, as somebody who specializes in the Shnayas and Braises, that Rav taught him the dinim of Midas? Now, we don't mean Midas as in the Masechta and Seder Kodshim. We mean Midas, the dinim that we're talking about over here, as far as measuring out commodities for sale. So is there anybody over here that Rav taught this Mishnah to that might be able to explain something to me? Tosfos actually brings that there are different Gersois over here. Is it de Asniye Rav Midas, that Rav taught him these dinim of Midas, or is it, now the point is, because the Gemara is going to say that the Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi, Achviye Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi, so Zeiri pointed to Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi, he said you can ask him what Rav had to say on the subject. Then we know that Rav had lived for many, many years in Eretz Yisrael, and then in his old age, he moved to Babel. So now, when years after that, Rav Elazar, who briefly had learned under Rav, when he now moved to Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to clarify a point as far as the din of our Mishnah. So he asks, back when Rav was living here in Eretz Yisrael, is there anybody that he taught these dinim and midas to where I could clarify a point with him? So Tosfos discusses now we often talk about sometimes Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi in connection with Rava, who was several generations later. So that would imply, therefore, that we have to be talking about a Talmud of Rav, like the Rashbam says. On the other hand, Tosfos says, not necessarily. It seems there were two Rav Yitzchak Barav, Chachamim named Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi, and one of them lived earlier and could well have been Rav's teacher. So in that case, Rav Elazar might be asking, is there somebody over here who taught Rav these dinim rather than who learnt these dinim from Rav? Either way, I mean, the point is that the Rav Elazar is implicitly saying, I have a question about this and I want to get the answer, but if you're looking for somebody who taught Rav these dinim in the first place, who taught him this Mishnah and the explanation of it, or is you looking for somebody to whom Rav taught these dinim? So Achviyeh Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi, so Zeiri pointed to Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi. So Rav Elazar goes over and asks him. So Rav Yitzchak Barav Dimi says, "My kapashalach, what are you finding difficult that you need to ask me?" So Rav Elazar answers, "The Tnan. We learned in the Mishnah here, Kino Mitzis. We said that once the three drops have come out of the original container, if at that point he tilts it on its side and more liquid oozes out, then the seller can still keep it." So the implication is, in other words, that so that's that. So it belongs to the seller. In other words, the hatznan. The problem with that, Rabbi Elazar says, we learn in a Mishnah in connection with the dinim of truma. In Masechta Trumas, we have a din also that if you're selling wine or oil of truma to somebody else, and you're pouring it into his container, then you have the din of the three drops. But there we say hukinu mitzah, that if you did turn it on its side and liquid continued to ooze out, harezu truma, then the remainder of the liquid is still considered truma. So the question is, therefore, so here on the one hand, in our Mishnah, we're saying that after the three drops, it belongs to the mocher. Well, then the equivalent in that with selling truma should be that it's considered chulin at that point. Otherwise it should be considered, if we're saying that it's still considered truma, then we're saying, in other words, that even though you did your three drops and that's that, but nevertheless, really everything else in it is still truma as well. And if you collect it, it's still going to be truma. And that would imply, therefore, that it's going to have to go to, that it's going to have to go to the koyan or to the lekeach. So it should have to go to the lekeach. And yet in our Mishnah, we're saying that the moicher can keep it. So Rabbi Elazar says, that's my question. That's why I wanted to know who Rav taught this to, or who taught it to Rav, in order to clarify that point. Tosfos actually points out that, when you get down to it, I mean, truma doesn't have to be the whole thing, of course. Truma only has to be 1/40th or 1/50th or 1/60th. So why don't we say then, therefore, so whatever amount you measured out, as long as it's the right proportion, is going to be truma. But Tosfos says we could be talking about, let's say, that you said, this container is going to be truma. And therefore, that means that, so now the Mishnah in Trumas is saying that even though he was Yotze by letting the three drops drip out, but if any more comes out, it's still going to be considered Truma, because to begin with, he had designated the entire thing as Truma. Which also Tosfos points out, a distinction is, with Truma, even though you have official measurements, 1/40th for when a person is generous, 1/50th if he's average, and 1/60th if he's stingy, the fact is, it is possible to make more larger percentages of that to be Truma, and there's no problem. With Meiser, Tosfos says, the din would be different. If the liquid that we're talking about is going to be for Meiser Rishon or Meiser Sheni, you can't voluntarily say, I'm going to give extra, because those are supposed to be exact proportions, and if you give too much, then you're mixing up Truma, and you're mixing up Meiser and Tevel. So we're talking over here specifically about truma, but the point is, again, with truma, we're saying that even though at that point you were yotze and the guy can't come and say, I want all the little bits that are stuck to the side, nevertheless, if you do collect them, they are considered truma, which means that they would go to the lekeach, whereas in our Mishnah, we're saying that the mocher keeps him. Omale. Said Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Jimmy answers him, Har Itman Allah, Amar Rabbi Bohu. You should know, it was explained about that Rabbi Bohu said, that in our Mishnah, the reason why it belongs to the Mocher Mishnah, Yirsh Bailam Noguba. The reason is, the reason why the Chachamim said that he gets to keep it, is because the Lekeach is Miyayish on it. It'd be too much of a bother to wait around until more oozes out after the three drops. As opposed to by truma, it's not a question of yish. Fine, you're miyayish. You don't care to stick around for it. The fact remains that it is truma. So and you can't take away the fact that it's truma even after the three drops come out. So there is quite a bit of discussion of Rishonim about different points about what the Gemara is saying over here. What was the Gemara even thinking in the first place to ask the question? Yeah, obviously there's a difference between Isser and Heter, between Isser the Heter and Dinim Mominus. But then Ramban explains that the question was that after three drops, the Mishnah says over there, you're allowed to put chulin into the barrel. Well, why should he be allowed to? Why isn't it considered that you're being mevatel truma? And the answer is just that since the whole concept of ein mevatlin isser l'chatchila, there is a concept in halacha. You can't go deliberately say, I'm going to take this isser and be mevatel it in 60 or whatever. In the case of truma, it's in 100 and say that it's going to be mutter. Fine, but that whole concept is only dirabbanan, and so the Mishnah is saying that even afterwards, that after the three drops have come out, then yes, you can, at that point, you can do that, really. The chachamim are not gonna tell you. You have to wait until it's completely empty. You're allowed at that point. You may not be able to drink what's left in there because the fact is it is truma. But on the other hand, you would be allowed to put the chulin at that point and be mevato the little bit of truma in there. And then there are various other points that Rishonim make on that subject. Tosfos also points out that another way of looking at it is that you could say it's a matter of brera to begin with. When you designated that whatever percentage of this is going to be truma, you didn't know which drops are going to be left in there at the end versus which drops are going to come out when you're pouring it out. So therefore, the Gemara could have answered that that's a point as well. When with things daraisa, we don't say brera. And therefore, that would be another way of looking at it as well. And that would explain why over there, if you did collect the remainder of it, then it still retained its status as truma. In that connection, by the way, an interesting side point is that Amram has a truva where somebody asked him that he says you wrote in connection with the halachas of korbanos that you have a din when you cooked food in a pot. You have a din when you cooked food of kodshim in a pot, and you have dinim about that you have to scour and cleanse out the pot thoroughly, but sometimes we're saying that, but on the other hand, with truma, we're saying you don't need to. It's enough to just rinse it out. And then Rambam explains that he's basing himself on this din over here that we're saying that even though you have a measurable amount of liquid left in the container after the three drops have come out, and still the Mishnah says at that point you can start using the barrel for chulin and not worry about those little bits. So kavah choymer that Rambam says you shouldn't need to kasher the keli after you use it to cook truma or whatever, it should be enough just to, at most, to rinse it out. As opposed to with korbanos, again, where you actually have to kasher it. Okay. The Mishnah had said, "V'achen v'ni ein chayv l'hatif v'chula." We said that a storekeeper doesn't have to do the three drops. And we said, Rabbi Yehuda says on Erev Shabbos im chashecha, he doesn't have to. So the question is, Rabbi Yehuda reisha koi olakula, is Rabbi Yehuda going on the reisha and he means to be lenient, where the Tanakhama had said he has to do the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda had said that on Erev Shabbos im chashecha, you're even a regular person, not a storekeeper, doesn't need to do that. Oya seifa koi, or duma, seifa koi olachumra. Or maybe he's going on the Sefer, and he's being Machmir, where the Tanakhama is saying a storekeeper never has to, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying no, only on Erev Shabbos, im Chashecha. So Toshma, the Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Oima, Erev Shabbos, im Chashecha, Chen V'ni Potter, in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda clearly says, on Erev Shabbos, when it's getting dark, then there's the Chen V'ni Potter, the storekeeper is Potter, from waiting until the three drops come out. He can just wait until the actual regular solid column of liquid stops, because a storekeeper is busy and he doesn't have time to wait for the three drops. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to be machmir over the Mishnah. He's saying a regular person has to do it even on Erev Shabbos in Chashecha. A storekeeper has to do it all the time, but on Erev Shabbos in Chashecha, he'd be potter. That's according to the gears that we have in the Gemara over here. Again, we said before there are Rishonim who had the girsa the other way around, that according to the Tanakhama, the storekeeper is always potter from doing the three drops, and Rabbi Yehuda is mentioning Erev Shabbos in Chashecha, so therefore, according to the Rimi Gash and those other Rishonim, the question would be the other way around. If Rabbi Yehuda is going on the Reisha, then he's being Machmer, because he'd be saying that the Mishnah is saying that the storekeeper does always have to do the three drops. So just like a balabais, because we said we shouldn't think because he's busy, then he gets away with it. So now Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that, so maybe Rabbi Yehuda is referring even to the reisha that we said that anything that comes out past the three drops belongs to the moicher. But Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that's only Erev Shabbos in Chashecha. Other times you would have to wait for more of it to drain out. Or is he going on the sefer and saying that the storekeeper does have to wait for the three drops, even though he's busy, but on Erev Shabbos and Chashecha he's not. So again, the different girsa over here is going to parallel the different girsa that we had in the Mishnah, whether we're saying that the storekeeper has to wait for the three drops or not. Mishnah says, Hashaleach es bnoi etzel chenpini. A person sends his son to a storekeeper, opunyan viyodei, and he sends with the child a punyan coin. Now the word punyan viyodei is in parenthesis over here because not necessarily does it belong over here. The Rashbam has it. So the Rashbam has the words opunyan viyodei in his girsa. The opunyan is a coin worth two isarin. On the other hand, Marshal talk about that. Even though the Rashbam mentions at the beginning. Now, one thing is, you have over here in this section of Gemara, you actually have two versions of Rashbam. You have the Rashbam that's printed on the side where it is throughout the rest of the Masechta, and then in the margin you have what was added in the printing in Vilna, Pirush Rashbam HaIkri, the real Pirush of Rashbam. Apparently, what was printed in the Gemaras before that is not the Rashbam's real Pirush. So here the Mishnah is mentioning that the child's carrying a punyan coin, but later on the Rashbam says, why didn't the Mishnah mention that point, which implies that those words don't belong in the Mishnah. So it's just according to that Gersa, without those words, means that he's sending his son to the store to buy a certain amount of oil. Anyway, modded like the Isser Shemen, the storekeeper measured out to the child an Isser's worth of oil, an Isser is half a punyan, the Nosanlais to Isser, and he gave him an Isser as change. If we say that the child brought a punyan, then it means that the storekeeper gave him an Isser of oil, and he returned him the Isser of change. If we don't have the words that he carried a punyan over there, then it might mean that he gave him an actual Isser's worth of oil, and then the Mishnah is going to describe what happens if the child drops the container and the oil breaks. The Rashbam actually brings that there are those who want to explain that it means that v'nosan leis to iser. So again, modded like the iser shemen, he measured out an iser of oil, v'nosan leis to iser, and he gave him an iser. So the Rashbam points out there are two possible ways you could understand those words, v'nosan leis to iser. It can mean that the storekeeper gave the child an iser of change, or it could mean that the child gave the storekeeper the iser that he was supposed to. But the Rashbam points out it can't mean that just the storekeeper is measured out for him an iser of oil, and then the Mishnah is going to go on to say what happens when the Mishnah says he lost the iser, means the iser is worth of oil. That doesn't really fit with the wording of the Mishnah or of the Gemara. So that's the thing. The Rashbam says we don't even have the words in the Mishnah that he gave him a punyan. It's meant to be understood. Usually a punyan would be the standard kind of coin that people would use. So therefore it's understood that the father would be sending the child with a punyan, and the storekeeper would be giving him back an iser of change, even if it doesn't say the words a punyan biyada in the Mishnah. So anyway, the point is that the child came there with a punyan. He got an issue of oil and he got an issue of change. Now what happens on the way home, the child breaks the container, so the drops or otherwise breaks the container and the oil spills. The other is the issue, and he loses the issue of change. So who's responsible? Chen v'nichayev, the storekeeper is responsible to pay for everything, as we're going to see in the Gemara Y. Rabbi Yehuda says he's potter. Shamanas came sholchay, because after all, the father sent the child on the understanding that we're going to see in the Gemara. The Tanakama is saying the storekeeper is chayav, because why are you giving things like that? Why are you giving a container of oil and money to a child who doesn't know how to take care of them? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, the father sent the child to the store, so it was with the understanding that the storekeeper should do just that. Now the Chachamim do agree to Rabbi Yehuda. If the child is holding the container, unlike in the first part of the Mishnah, where the storekeeper provided the container, and then the storekeeper poured the oil into it, then the storekeeper would be potter, because then definitely the father meant that the Rashbam actually says it means the storekeeper, the Chachamim would agree that the storekeeper is potter for the payment for the breakage of the keli. On the other hand, even then, the Chachamim say he would still have to take responsibility for the loss of the oil and of the coin for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara now. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim beisiv shemen." I can understand as far as the coin, as far as the change, and as far as the oil. B'chol pligi, the machlokas would be as follows: the rabbanan savri lo idui shadri. The Chachamim say, when you send a child to the store, doesn't mean that you should send the oil with him. He's a child; you can't take care of such things. It means that you're sending the son with a message to the store. Please send. I need an issu of oil. I need an issu's worth of oil at home. Please send one of your workers from your store to bring it to me. So, you know, so in other words, like, you know, like nowadays when you call a store and you make an order for delivery, you never meant that you should send it with a child. But Rabbi Yehuda Savar the Shaduri Le Shadri. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that we can say the father sent to the child and he meant that the child should actually pick up what he's buying over there. So that would explain the machlokas as far as that. Ela Shavar Tzloichis. But you're talking about as far as the breakage of the keli. Why should the storekeeper be chayev according to the Chachamim? Aveda midasi. Isn't it aveda midas when you give a container to a child? In effect, you're making it hefker. You don't know if he's going to return it empty. Is he going to return it? So obviously what he means is that, fine, I'm sending the child to the store with the container. You may decide to fill up the container. You may decide, you know what, I can't entrust that to a child. Let me send it with one of my delivery boys. And the coin also, fine, the coin itself is also aveda midas, but at least when the storekeeper is returning the change, then again, he had no business doing that. He should have realized that I don't have to do anything with the child. I'll just, okay, he comes and tells me his father needs an issur's worth of oil. Fine, I'll take it from there, and I'll send it with one of my delivery boys. So the question is, why in the Mishnah is the Tanakhama making the storekeeper chayev even for the container that the father sent? At the end of the mission, we're talking about where the father sent the container. But we're saying over here that the storekeeper is also going to be responsible for the empty container itself. So why is he high? As the father, so we are talking about the father gave the empty container to the child. Isn't that aveda midas? So he understands that he might get it back empty, he might get it back full, but he entrusted it to a child. Why should the storekeeper be responsible to pay for it? Because we're talking about that the balabais, the father himself actually sells containers. So therefore, so he's willing to sell it to the storekeeper. If the storekeeper wants it, then he'll buy it. So we're talking about that the storekeeper looked at the, took the container and wanted to check it out and see whether he wants to buy it. And then he returned it to the child. And therefore, the reason he's chayav for it now is Kiddush Shmuel. It's based on what Shmuel says. Exactly that. If a person takes a keli from a craftsman intending to check it and see whether it's something worth buying, the nanas biyode, and an onus happens and it breaks. So Shmuel says chayev, so he'd be chayev for paying it because once he's going to find it whole and able to buy it. And the Shvam also adds, we're talking about that the price of it has already been established, price of it is already known. So therefore, so now in effect, he was koneh it. So now when he gives it back to the child, then he's the one causing it, in effect, to be damaged because he's giving it to a child who's not a bendas, where he already picked it up and therefore became chayav b'achri yosei. So this is the Rashbam and Tosfos referred to. There's a sugya on the subject in Masechta Nedarim. Tosfos points out there's a bit of discussion. Why is that? Is it that we say that he's considered a lekeach, or is it that we're saying that he's considered a shoyel? Whatever the case, the point is, so in this case over here, he acquired the keli by picking it up and looking at it, and now when he gives it back to the child, that's careless of him, and therefore he's chayav. So the problem with that is, as the Gemara is going to say, it comes out then that what Shmuel is saying, Lema de Shmuel, Tanoihi, it comes out then that Shmuel's din is only according to Rabbi Yehuda. It comes out that that Shmuel's din is only according to the Chachamim in our Mishnah. We would prefer to say, fine, granted, the halacha may be like the Chachamim, but nevertheless, we would still prefer to say that Shmuel's din goes according to everybody. So we'd rather have a different explanation of the Mishnah. And therefore, so the Gemara will continue. We'll continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, and explain what exactly the scenario is over here. Okay.